basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. We've got our first games of Vegas Summer League, at least for the Lakers, tonight and tomorrow. Going to talk about that a little bit later. Yesterday, we had a battle of the top two picks that was super fun. And just going to hop around the league a little bit, but want to start with the Kawhi trade, or possibly not. D got some news yesterday that Toronto would assume any risk that comes with the adjudication of the Kawhi Leonard situation, which, I don't know, might include a suspension. Apparently there's some rumblings that in the next week or two there's going to be a resolution there. Want to bring this up in a Lakers context just to start out with, in that situation I think impacts like the Peyton Watson situation, which impacts the Kuminga situation and all of that, that all of this adds up to there's a good chance, I think, the Lakers summer drags out a little bit just as different situations resolve, and that I think there's a lot of interconnectivity between teams and all of that. And I've been wondering why the heck this has taken so long with the Kawhi situation in the first place. This should have been resolved even before the draft lottery. On that note, too, on the blink observations, I don't know about the rookie they got over with the Clippers and Keaton Wagler. We will see. That's, Summer League is not, you know, determinative of everything, but I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, D, just would love your thoughts on the Kawhi situation, how you think it impacts the Lakers and all of that.
Yeah, first, the Kawhi stuff, just I want to just second what you said. I definitely understand the league not wanting to put a deadline on an investigation like this, right? And the idea of saying, well, it should be wrapped up by date X, and that's a mandate, and because that could lead to potentially the investigation, which doesn't include subpoena power, maybe not being able to get people on the record or not being able to gather the amount of evidence that they want or not being able to be as thorough as they would like to be, and on and on. And so I get it. The flip side of this, though, and I texted you this last night and then you sent me a nice retort, which was even a tighter timeline. But I was essentially saying this should have been resolved by the draft, because in theory, Kawhi could have been traded on draft night. I felt like once the new transaction window opened for the league, if there was a possibility of Kawhi being traded and the team that he was going to being impacted in any way, which the league would have forecasted this, irrespective of anything else, if they thought whatever the outcome is with this, if it's bad and negative towards the player, whatever team he's on, if it's not the Clippers, is going to have to deal with this, then they should have built in contingencies around the idea that he wouldn't be on the Clippers and that this would impact other teams. If for nothing else, send a memo to the 29 other teams, including the Clippers, and basically say, as part of this ongoing investigation, if Kawhi Leonard changes teams, the new team may be responsible for certain aspects of the adjudication of this. It should have been communicated that way.
Absolutely. And at this point, you probably end up with the situation where they got to reopen trade talks, where, because it sounds like both the Clippers and the Raptors want to get this done. But yes, Kawhi's going to be out for half the year or whatever the suspension is, and who knows what this punishment will be for the Clippers. If I'm Toronto, I'm going back like, yeah, all that pick compensation, I'm going to need a little bit of that back because I'm not going to get him for half a season.
There's even a possibility of, and this seems extreme right now, but if it's determined, again, and I hate to talk in ifs like this, but if it's determined that the root of his contract in general is nefarious in any way, shape, or form, and the league takes measures against the contract that he's currently on, then that also impacts the Raptors, right? Mm-hmm. And if they're just like, no, his contract is voided in some way, shape, or form, or we don't consider this a valid NBA contract because we've found that there's been these misdoings in this other way where there was additional compensation and yada, 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 then that throws his contract status into limbo as well.
You're totally right about that. I don't think that they will do that due to the NBA's self-interest in all of that. But sure, if that's how they got this contract and Kawhi in general, I think that should be the outcome. I don't think it will be. And if we want to play this game, like tons of other teams, including the Lakers, could join in that game. So you can't, again, this, to me, this sets a precedent in terms of how this gets dealt with overall and the amount of time that it takes and just all of that, like it plays into that.
So on a certain level, I think it's more than fair to say that the league has bungled this. If in no other way, seemingly, the timeline aspect of this and the lack of communication around this, it shouldn't have taken a trade to be executed. And then as part of the trade call or aftermath of that, then the league is essentially telling the Raptors, FYI, as we're about to consummate this trade that you guys have agreed to the terms on, if there's anything that goes against Kawhi in this, that's on y'all. Now, I think that this doesn't absolve the Clippers either, because I'm guessing there can both be player discipline and organizational discipline. I expect the Clippers to be disciplined in some way, shape, or form, regardless, if there's guilt at all. And so if something was proven to be done wrong, the Clippers are a part. But if it's deemed that Kawhi, you knowingly did X, Y, and Z as well, and now you have to pay the consequences for that part of things. Again, that all should have been communicated to all the teams before this transaction window started so that they could have done stuff. And that's why when you retorted to me, forget the draft. In reality, it probably should have been done by the lottery, because the lottery then starts to inform how teams are going to act at the draft in terms of what picks they have and everything else. And so I'm with you on that part, too.
I mean, they let them get the number 5 pick in the draft while under an active investigation for this crap that has been going on for almost a year now. Now, again, I'm not sure that pick was a good one. We will see. But yeah, like, what do you think about the angle of how this impacts the Lakers? And just my thought that this is kind of a big knot that we're all in and the league's in a bit of limbo right now.
I think that this definitely plays into some of the scenarios we discussed in yesterday's pod about the Kuminga, Mathurin, Watson piece of this. I also think that if you're drawing the sort of conspiracy web of connective points, that Kuminga is also somewhat entangled with the LeBron decision as well, which you had mentioned a few pods ago.
They keep bringing up Cleveland as a possible alternative to the Lakers in terms of where Kuminga might end up. But if LeBron goes there, where does he play?
Exactly. And so all of this shows that the league is intertwined in a lot of ways, which you don't need us to tell you that. But I do believe that the Clippers were seemingly acting as a team that was trying to reshape its roster, obviously, after they traded for Kawhi, and what that was going to mean for the positionality of their team, right? And so they signed and traded away John Collins, who was basically a power forward player and could split time with Kawhi, seemingly, at one of the forward spots. They replaced John Collins with Rui on a free agent contract, essentially. And then they had their own restricted free agent in Benedict Mathurin, who is a small forward, and they are looking at another sort of combo forward, supposedly, in Peyton Watson as a, do we want to try to do a sign and trade or whatever to try to acquire Watson? Well, to me, Kawhi is at a higher level of importance to a roster and in terms of contributions than Brandon Ingram is, right? And so if you have Kawhi on your roster, that might impact, especially since he makes so much more money than Brandon Ingram, that it's like, what are we going to do with this? And how are we going to resolve this? And the connectivity between what's going to happen with Kuminga, which definitely impacts the Lakers, to me is connected to what's going to happen with Peyton Watson and what's going to happen with Benedict Mathurin. And the Clippers are a piece of this. And so I definitely think that there's connection here, Pete. But independent of all of that, it feels like the Kuminga stuff is going to remain unresolved for at least a little while longer. So let's take a break here. And when we come back, I want to hit some reporting on that and then go around the league a little bit more. So, Pete, being a Northern California person and someone who's locked into national pods as well, quite frankly, I'm a bit tired of hearing Jonathan Kuminga's name entangled and out there with regards to how negotiations are going. It's a bit of a just a sore spot in general. And I think Warriors fans are sort of laughing within the context of, oh, now the Lakers get their own little taste of Jonathan Kuminga negotiation stuff. But there was a round of reporting overnight. We talked about reporting yesterday that came from Kobe Price. And now there was another round of national reporting coming from Jake Fisher on Mark Stein's Substack. And Fisher was essentially explaining that the Hawks may not be too eager to take on Jared Vanderbilt's contract. And that might require three-team machinations in order to create a sign-and-trade if Jared Vanderbilt is going to be the contract that's going out. On top of that, there was reporting that Kuminga's salary, I don't want to call them demands, but his interest in getting paid is that he's looking for a contract that would be closer to the $20 million a year range rather than the 10-ish million, obviously, that the Lakers were offering. This is one of those classic stalemates where everyone's guns are pointed at each other. And it's just, how are you really going to make this work? Which I think comes back to conversations we were having yesterday about the Lakers' interest and other options and everything else, which without going down that path again, this all feels like nothing's close. And if nothing's close, this can go on for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no real deadline for this to get done, really, until training camp. A lot of this restricted free agency stuff that I think impacts Kuminga as well. So long as that remains unresolved, I think the guns will remain pointed at each other. I share your level of, I am kind of tired of hearing about this. And it is interesting to get the different details. And frankly, Fisher's reporting that Atlanta's less interested in taking Vando back strikes me as more true than the idea that it was Atlanta's idea to do Vando and a pick swap. That seems pretty advantageous to the Lakers at the end of that. Yeah, I don't want to hear about this all the rest of the summer, but you remember the Christian Wood negotiations a couple of years ago that dragged out a bit into the summer? That one thing that we don't factor in nearly enough in all this is that a bunch of people have jobs that they have to report on NBA news. And there's this between right around now and all the way through training camp, it's this dead zone where if there is an NBA story to be told, and this is a story, I'm not saying it's not, but it just gets overreported because there's legit nothing else going on.
Can I tell you, Pete?
You should see the look on his face right now, by the way.
I am so happy. We still haven't done a big LeBron pod, right? Because he's not even signed with another team yet. But I am very happy that the Lakers are not an option for LeBron as part of this free agent process. Because when you talk about the oversaturation of reporting and why I had that look on my face, we're in the teams that want LeBron are sending voice memos to Rich Paul that he's forwarding to LeBron James as part of, and is LeBron going to actually meet with teams? It seems like he's not, and everything is this is like a game show at this point. And Rich Paul being the, obviously, he's LeBron's agent. He's going to be involved with the negotiations and everything else. But Rich Paul content creator and Rich Paul player agent, the circle of overlap seems to be the same, right? And it's one of those things where I'm just like, thank goodness the Lakers aren't part of this at all, right? Where Rob Pelinka has to send by carrier pigeon his love and devotion about how he sees LeBron James fitting into the Lakers roster. No, man, leave that to everything that's going on in Cleveland and Philly and Minnesota. Let them deal with that stuff. And I'm just like, the reporting on this, thank goodness we're not involved with any of that aspect of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard Bomani Jones's producer, I forget his name, but he was theorizing that Braun wasn't going to make his official announcement until after the World Cup. We'll see. But for content creation type of purposes and get the biggest headlines, I was like, that kind of sounds right. And, you know, I've talked a lot about the Lakers being a lot less enthusiastic about bringing LeBron back this upcoming season for quite some time. And we haven't talked a lot about the why, but so much of what I've heard is LeBron's pretty great, but everything that comes along with him,
yeah,
after 8 years, I think there is a level of fatigue within the Lakers of just not wanting to deal with that shit, that you can take that too far and sort of cut your nose off to spite your face. And LeBron's still really good. And like I said, there's a lot of hubris in the idea of we're not really going to make LeBron feel wanted and all of that. But I get it.
Well, I would say this too, that the Lakers are one of the few teams in the league that has actually done last season retirement tour stuff more than once,
mm-hmm,
right? They did
for
it with
alleged
Kareem.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did it with Kobe. Kobe and Kareem are obviously beloved franchise icons whose place within the lore of the organization was unquestioned, right? Both won 5 titles with the Lakers and were essentially decade-plus long players, Kobe for 2 decades, but Kareem for, what, like 13, 14 seasons he played for the Lakers? It was a very long time. And one of the things that you brought up that I think is important within this context is that if there was already any sense of this is starting to feel old for us with the relationship with LeBron, any aspect of that, imagine then having to say, now what we're also going to do is turn that celebratory feeling up even higher,
mm-hmm,
and maybe deal with even extra noise around what's going on, because it should turn into this thing of, no, this is sort of a farewell and this is a bigger idea of what's going to happen with him. And the possibility of that even being more than one more season, right? Where, mm-hmm, is he going to play for year 25 rather than it just being year 24? And the unknowing that comes from LeBron being maybe the most and biggest example of my own man who makes my own decisions, mm-hmm, around what's going to happen with my career, and I'll do things on my time, on my terms,
yep,
and he's earned all 100%. Of that. And I would honestly say that some of that has been very good for the sort of power balance within the league, where ownership has often held, mm-hmm, those reins of control. And LeBron has been one of the key factors and spearheading that idea of the players should have more power within this way. But when it comes at the end of someone's career and there's always some extra stuff that's going on, and again, I don't know how much this matters or not, but his agent having his own sort of media outlet now to be able to talk on any topic he wants. And sometimes that going over into very publicly talking about the contract status of players who are currently on your team, mm-hmm, what their roles should be, should they be traded? That stuff's just a headache. It, mm-hmm, just is. And LeBron, his play ending up being collateral damage within the context of some of this other stuff. That sounds weird to say, but I also think there's truth in that when, mm-hmm, it comes from the Lakers' perspective of why they may or may not want LeBron to still be on the team, even though he's still a very good player. This is something we haven't dove into a lot within our LeBron discussions, but I do think that in bringing it back and recentering it on the sort of glacial pace that free agency seems to be moving at this specific moment and how it impacts the Lakers' search for a starting forward next to Luka Doncic, I think it is all connected.
It is.
And that as LeBron stays out there making his decision on where he wants to play, and as the league has sort of done what they've done with Kawhi Leonard and how that might impact some other things, yeah, the Lakers are just like, okay, well, we're going to keep doing our business, but they're not going to, I don't think, make a deal that they're not comfortable with. And going out there into the league and trying to find a deal that they can make that they are comfortable with isn't so simple as these other factors just hang out there.
Yeah, so everybody be prepared to hurry up and wait when it comes to that. But one thing we are going to have to wait for is Summer League. Got some games tonight, had a great one yesterday. Let's take a break here, come back and talk about it. So yesterday, D, I know you didn't get a chance to catch the whole game, but you saw some of it. We had a matchup between two absolute monsters, in my opinion, in AJ DeBanza and Darren Peterson. DeBanza got the best of Peterson in that matchup. Peterson was great in the 2-3 summer league games that they had at Utah. Again, I'm always interested in that blink impression. What did you see from them in that game?
DeBanza's a dude.
Yeah.
Right. So I had seen Peterson, and we talked about him the other day. Peterson's such a polished offensive player. It's hard to believe that he played 1 year of college and that was it. And the sort of concerns that we might have had about how much he wants to play or all the stuff that happened at Kansas, a lot of that got alleviated to me by listening to him talk a little bit after he went out and kicked a bunch of dudes' asses. And I was just like, this dude wants it, and he wants it in a way where he sort of wants to embarrass you in some ways. Oh, I recognize that. Great players have that in them. And so Peterson's a dude for sure. DeBanza, remember when we talked about how Adu was playing and there was a little bit of wildness to him and how he was like getting downhill and sort of the flailing of the arms and how he could be off balance? DeBanza had some of that wildness to him, but it was channeled with this fluidity and power and then shot making at the end where I'm just like, oh no, man, this dude's already a problem.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to stop this dude from getting to the basket? He's big, he's strong, he's freaking explosive. He had that one play where he ripped through, bodied a guy, took two steps and just dunked the damn ball from the dotted line
with two hands.
And I'm just like, holy cow, what's up with this dude? And I get it's summer league and there's not a ton of guys who are at his athletic level in general, and even fewer of them exist in a summer league environment. But I was super impressed with just how he was just shedding guys. And he's going to be a rookie and he's a one and done player. It's not supposed to be where guys at his age level are supposed to be able to look like that physically. It also reminded me some of Cooper Flagg in that, whoa, if you're like this as an 18, 19-year-old, what are you going to look like when you're 24, 25? It's like, is anyone going to be able to stay in front of you? And so I was super impressed by him.
Yeah, just the combination of size, strength, and skill level. And there's a nastiness to both of them that I like. That same thing you were talking about with Peterson. I think DeBanza has a touch of that as well, where he really wants to kick your ass. He was very communicative in that game, like really fired up. You could tell that it meant a lot to both of them to be playing each other and kind of proving their mettle. DeBanza, I think, missed all of his three-point shots. That's something I think he's going to need to grow at. He was the leading scorer in the NCAA last year. First guy to get drafted number one since Glenn Big Dog Robinson back in 94. One of the few college players I've ever like woken up early to watch college games on CBS for. I love
Big
watching.
Big Ten dude, Purdue.
Yeah, Purdue.
Purdue Boilermaker.
Gene Cady at Purdue. That was a fun time. And so DeBanza at BYU was the on-ball guy. And now he's going to be going to a team with Trae Young and Anthony Davis. And so I'm very curious to see what the distribution of responsibilities were and all of that. And I think he needs to kind of add a three ball. But it was an interesting test of the difference between how tall is Peterson? 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah, like 6'4", 6'5". Yeah.
The difference between that and a 6'9" guy. And obviously, I agree with Garcia's point about wingspan. You don't play with basketball, it's top of your head and wingspan and all that, but he's noticeably bigger, AJ is, than Peterson. And that, when you've got a guy who could create shots for themselves at that height relative to the guy that's 6'4", who's phenomenal in his own right, I just think it's a whole different level of shot creation when you can do that. And so between his footwork, his ball handling, his shot creation, one thing I look for 2D is how many shots can you get up? And that's part of the reason why I'm looking sideways at Keaton Wagler from the Clippers. He could not get past anybody. He was playing Acuff, who does not have a first name yet, but Acuff went 6 of 20 from the field. So it's not like he had a super efficient night, but the 20 shots that he got up relative to the 7 that Wagler did, that's one thing I look for, is just, can you get it up? It's not always going to be the most efficient environment.
Acuff is a dude who, he can go get his. The comparison as a player type is like Kyrie or Dame, these sorts of guys who can generate shots from all over the court. And Acuff's got some wiggle to him. He can shoot the deep three ball. He's a good pull-up shooter. There's just a lot where he can get a shot. This, going left, going right, coming off a screen, stepping back, getting to the basket, played in the mid-range, floater. He's got a big appetite, and there's a buffet of shots all over the court that he's ready to go try and feast on. Are they all going to go in? Probably not, but part of the value of a player like him, and this is true at the NBA level as it is at the park, when there's a guy who's dominating the ball and dominating shots, he starts to draw defensive attention because guys start to be like, oh, well, no, this guy's going to attack, 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 and that's where the ball's going to be. And we know from watching Kobe all of those years, when you've got that sort of attack mentality, the playmaking and the shot creation starts to come in a variety of ways beyond just me being able to pass the ball to like the next guy. Guys cut, they get open, they get offensive rebounds, and there's just value in that volume. And if you're a guy who can't get to that volume, then you have to start running plays for him and do those plays work and did I get open? And it's just a different quality and a different look offensively overall.
This is the essence of who Luka is. For as great of a passer as he is, I view him as a scorer first. And that's a lot of times how he starts out games, is really in a, I'm going to try to attack and get mine type of mentality that then draws exactly those type of coverages that you're talking about. And then he can make the incredible passes out of that. But that sort of mentality really matters a lot. And I've seen it from a lot of the top guys. And Wagler, you know, went 1-for-7 in that game and just couldn't get by people. I might be wish casting a little bit here, D, but like I need, after all the aspiration stuff and Kawhi stuff, and they get the 5th pick, I'm angry. If that guy ends up being a bust and then they lose future picks, it's looking pretty dark for them no matter what they do.
I was also watching clips last night of LeBaron Filon, who was the other guard who was sort of falling in the draft at the same time that Cameron Carr was falling. And I remember we were
talking,
maybe 5 picks out from the Lakers pick, and I think Filon ended up getting drafted right at 20 or 21.
Yeah, right around.
But it was in that range where I'm just like, wait, are both Filon and Carr going to be available when the Lakers pick? That'd be freaking awesome. Especially since both of them were projected to be late lottery in the teens, right? It ends up that Filon didn't last and he got picked, but he was out there looking like Jamal Crawford to me. I'm just like, oh my goodness, look at the wiggle that this guy's got. He got a ton of shake, and the inside out, behind the back, and then jump stepping into jump shots. I'm just like, okay, bro, go get yours.
He's
nice. And so
yeah,
that explosiveness and shot creation and the ability to play in tight spaces, but then create separation in order to get a shot off, that's just a great skill to have in terms of shot creation. That's not the sort of player that Cameron Carr is, but the Lakers got Luka and Austin Reeves to do a lot of that shot creation stuff. And even a guy like Sexton, who's averaged 20 plus points a game in his career, in a single season, not over the course of his career, there's value in that sort of shot creation. And so that was one of the reasons why I was high on Carr after I started to watch tape on him and understand like, oh, well, this must have been why Pete was very happy to get this guy, because he's a guy who complements what the Lakers already have on their team.
Absolutely. He can get you 20 points without being a main on-ball guy. And just, it's a great fit with the type of guys that we have. Okoro looked at very good for Detroit as well, along with Filon in terms of shot creators there. And so let's wrap up here on what we're looking for from this Lakers team in Vegas. We got a little preview at the California Classic, got 3 games. My main takeaway from those 3 games is oftentimes they were starting some of their worst players, aside from Adu and Carr, that definitely should be starting. But there were guys kind of deeper in the bench that are better than the guys they'd been playing. And that's going to happen when you get a whole new group of 15 players or whatever it is, and figuring out who's who when there's not a massive talent differential the way that there can be on the NBA level. But I hope that they are a little bit tighter than they were to come out, a little bit more organized on offense. There was one game where they had like 11 turnovers in 12 minutes and the guard play is not great. And that's really the main spot that I want to see, is just certain guys like Luke Goody, Chase Ross, play a little bit more than Suter. And although that said, they've got Suter on a 2-way contract.
Yeah.
Give him more of a look. We can be susceptible to jumping to too quick of conclusions off of Summer League for sure. But that's sort of my main takeaway from the California Classic, is you were playing the wrong guys at a couple of spots and you got better players at other spots. What are you looking for in Vegas?
So Suter's a guy that I was going to bring up first and foremost, because of the three two-way guys, he's looked the worst. And Corke and Magnon have done their jobs. In fact, I think that Magnon is starting to make a case for, hey, man, I can play defense, and you guys don't have a lot of guys like this on your actual roster. And so if there's a trade that opens up a roster spot, for example, I'm not saying that Magnon should make the team, but I think he can potentially leverage some of this play. And if he can carry it over into training camp and preseason, I'd be interested to see what happens with Magnon. It's like a defense first, let me go out there and guard my ass off, dude. That said, and getting back to Suter, he only played in two of the three games and at the California Classic, but in the two games that he did play, he did not look very good at all. And I'm interested to see if that shifts in these games. The thing that honestly stood out to me from both the Washington Utah game that I watched a lot of the first part of the game, and then just a lot of the clips from other highlights of all the top rookies that were playing, is the guard play from these teams looks so much higher than what
so
the
much
Lakers
higher.
Have in general. And Suter's a guy that I know he's not a point guard, but he is a shooting guard and he's a guard. And yeah. The level of guard skill that he was exhibiting was mostly, well, I can make the simple play, I can make the simple pass, but I'm not creating a lot of separation, I'm not creating a lot of advantage. And that was leading to him playing relatively poorly. And honestly, Pete, if we get through three more summer league games and he looks the way that he looked in the two previous games, his two-way should go to someone else.
Yeah.
And that's just sort of where I'm at with that. And so to me, if there's one thing overall that I'm looking for from a Lakers team that isn't very good overall, I know they went 2-1 out of the California Classic, but they didn't super impress me from the standpoint of like, oh, there's a lot of guys on this group that I truly, truly like and look like NBA players. The guys who they're allocating resources to, I want those guys to show that they can play. I believe it's there with Magnon in terms of what his skill set is. I'm interested to seeing what happens with Okorke, but Suter's got a long road ahead of him from what I saw before. And if he can't do it, then
yeah, gotta move on.
Allocate those resources to someone else.
Frankly, Magnon's the only guy, and I liked Okereke fine enough, but Magnon's the only guy that sort of has a two-way locked up in my mind. Those other spots are open, and I want those guys to just look better than the other players out there. And if not, whether it's on your team or somebody on another one, that's one of the things about Summer League is you get to scout everybody in one place and see them in person, talk to them afterward and all of that, that those should be open for open competition. So got back-to-back games tonight and then Saturday night, both at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Make sure to check those out. We will be back on Monday to talk about how that went and if there has been any movement, knock on wood, in the Lakers offseason otherwise. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires again. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Down.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, pretty pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move, two, one,
miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant, yes!
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.